This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, boys and girls. Happy whatever, 16th of December. All I know is it's getting ever closer to Christmas, and I find myself less and less prepared for whatever holiday is arriving. hopefully those of you listening on Harrisonburg's 95.1 or the Lexington 95.9 got a little snow and not just some pure ice. Those of us here on the 91.9 in Charlottesville, just rain. Interesting program for today, and despite the title of the organization, this is not just about Charlottesville and Albemarle County. This topic today about growth in general and the neighboring counties, of which WNRN broadcasts, also heavily involved in today's topic. And the group, Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population, represent these other counties, although I guess that would have made for a really weird title, wouldn't it? Jack Marshall, president of the company, of the organization. Jack, how are you?
I'm doing fine, and thanks for having us, Rick.
Well, I appreciate it. I think when we were talking through email the last few days, the question was who could make it in despite the weather.
The foul weather.
Right. Turned out not to be a
problem. Had an inch of rain, which we need.
Yeah. Also here with us, Tom Olivier. Is that the proper pronunciation?
Right. That's correct.
All right. Thanks for coming in. Michael, we can turn up these microphones a little bit. And Jeff Sobel. Jeff, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing very well. So we have Jack. I have you down as president of ASAP or ASAP?
Either way you want it.
Because,
it's
you
been
know, when,
a
you,
lot
when
worse.
You do some Googling on ASAP, I learned a lot about driving improvement programs and people who drink while driving. So you have to be very particular when you Google if you just want to learn about the sustainable population
issue. But as you said, Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population is more than a mouthful, and ASAP works fine.
Okay. So, Jack, you're president. Tom, your position?
I'm a member of the board, and I'm on the committee that's working on the particular sustainable population project.
And Jeff?
Yes, I'm the executive director.
The executive director. So that means that you actually do the work, and Jack gets to be the face of the organization?
I get the glory. He does the work.
I'm happy to report that these guys do a lot of work, and they're very helpful and essential to getting what we need to get done.
All right, write down your phone number that you need today. I think today's program will get us a few phone calls, but make sure that when you do, Michael will patch you through and we'll go from there. 979-0919 for the Charlottesville Albemarle folks. If you're a little further out, use our toll-free line, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's 1-877-967-6762 and 979-0919. And before we get started, it's we want to thank businesses like 45fix.com for allowing us to be on the air. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 45fix.com, the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. All right. ASAP, Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population. I'm curious, Jack, like you said, that is a mouthful. Give me even more of a mouthful and tell me what ASAP, what the goal is of ASAP.
Well, the mission is to increase knowledge and awareness about the effects of population growth on our natural environment and on the quality of life locally, and to encourage policies and mechanisms that'll help our region, and specifically Albemarle and Charlottesville, to reach and maintain a sustainable population size.
That just sounds so...
stuffy.
No, well, but it also sounds so, short. I expected, generally when you read the mission of some organization whose goal is rather dramatic, I expected a two-paragraph piece.
Well, we got the next hour to talk about the two paragraphs.
Right.
The logic behind the organization, when we set it up 5 years ago with about a dozen local activists, environmentalists, was to help raise both knowledge and consciousness about the impacts of growth on local communities. We tend to think that that growth is good and growth is inevitable and growth is necessary for economic prosperity. And in ASAP, we argue that basically that's nonsense, that while growth is good up to a point, there is a point at which the costs of growth, environmentally, in terms of just having a nice community, start to exceed the benefits. And that every smart community has to look at that and define what that point is and start early, not when it's too late, to start to level off at that rough point.
All right. I guess the first question for me is if you are indeed advocates for a sustainable Albemarle population, what is our sustainable population?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out right now. That's why the county and the city have given us or set aside some funds, and we've been applying for foundation grants, and now we're going to go ahead and try to find the answer to that question.
I think there's a concept that has to be sort of developed and we need to chew on related to a sustainable population. Broadly, I think it means a population of a size that can exist in a particular place, certainly without destroying sort of the ecosystems and the natural processes that go on and that are required for human existence. In other words, we still depend on nature, ecosystems, to purify water and the air and so on. And a long time ago, there were relatively few people in the world. But as time has gone on, we have more and more people with time. And in addition, once upon a time, we were hunters and gatherers and had a pretty small footprint on the Earth's surface. But what has happened as we've developed technology, we've become more and more proficient at sort of channeling the Earth's surface to serve our immediate needs. We have automobiles, we use fossil fuels, and so on. And so we, in fact, exist now not simply by living in a very close relationship and with a limited footprint in natural systems that surround us. Rather, we often, the way we live, we humanize the landscape. We build what previously were forests, wetlands, and so on, or we specialize their use. We use them for, say, agricultural production. Yet, sort of some of these natural systems that we depend on, we have to have them to persist still, but as time goes on and as we alter the Earth's surface more and more, there are fewer and fewer of these natural systems to support us. And so as we change the surface of the Earth and make direct more and more of it to our sort of immediate cultural and other needs, we have less and less of nature to provide us with these things we've typically been able to take for granted in the past. And somewhere, there won't be enough of nature left to support the numbers of us that come into
being. That sounds truly like a biologist viewpoint.
That's right. That's what it is.
Is that your specialty?
Biology and biological anthropology, but I'm involved with agriculture, too.
Is there going to be, is the goal to have a set number? I mean, is the expectation anyway of ASAP, by the way, Jack Marshall, Tom Olivier, Jeff Sobel, here in the studio, advocates for a sustainable Albemarle population, although, again, I think many of these concepts apply far beyond the boundaries of Albemarle County. is the expectation of the organization and of those who've given you funds and of those who read about you in the paper that you will come up with a set figure, 150,000 people, whatever, or is it more that you come up with a plan that as we do this, we must do that?
We want to actually come up not with a number, but a range. The community that we're talking about for largely arbitrary reasons, is Charlottesville and Albemarle. As you know, Charlottesville has a population of about 40,000 residents, and it's stayed virtually constant for the last three decades. Albemarle County, on the other hand, now has about 90,000, and it's growing, we argue, at about 2%, and it certainly has grown at an average of 2.1% for the last 30 years. The community, the two localities combined, are roughly 130,000. And our question is, so what do we want to be when we grow up? What is a sustainable size? And Rick, let me go back a step. One of the issues on which ASAP is built is the sustainability accords. In the late 1990s, the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission set up a group of local experts on a whole raft of sustainability issues, looking at the economy, the various environmental aspects, with an effort to try to define how we, as a larger community, could ensure that we are sustainable. That is, that we're not exceeding growth expectations that will eat away at, as Tom pointed out, the benefits of our local environment. Seven basic principles were determined, one of which is, and I'm quoting here, in a sustainable community, the members understand that there are limits to growth. And the next step was affirmations. So what do we do about that? And one of them was that our community will, and I'm quoting again, strive for a size and distribution of human population that will preserve the vital resources of the region for future generations. And that's the essence of sustainability. And we think while communities often give lip service to the need to be sustainable, they don't really get down to brass tacks and the hard political decisions of ensuring that we will be sustainable. And that's what ASAP is set up to do.
And I think it's important to note, too, that the sustainability accords came out of the council, the Sustainability Council, Thomas Jefferson Council, which was an endeavor created by the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, which in fact included a bunch of localities surrounding Albemarle and the city of Charlottesville, for example, Nelson County and some others. So that this kind of concern about sustainability, it's something that's been present in the minds of citizens for, you know, over 10 years, and local governments have gotten pretty explicitly interested in it too. And I know, for example, Albemarle adopted the accords into its comprehensive plan.
And as did Charlottesville.
Right, sorry?
And Charlottesville.
And not long ago, in fact, one of the Albemarle supervisors, David Slutsky, in the course of a board discussion, said that, you know, nature has created a carrying capacity for us, and we have an obligation, if we're going to plan responsibly, to identify what it is. And basically, ASAP's project, what we're here to talk about this morning, is in fact, we want to launch an endeavor, you know, in a very exploratory way. We're kind of learning as we go, but we're launching an endeavor to kind of face this complex question and say, well, how many people can we have around here and still live sustainably?
You know, we had somebody who called in. By the way, anyone can call in, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Caller wants to know, and I have a follow-up question to this. Caller wants to know if population is increasing, decreasing, or staying the same.
At what point? Well, at just about every point, it's increasing at a global level, at a state level. Albemarle County, as I said, is, we believe the evidence from the last 30 years shows that we are increasing at a rate that doubles every 35 years, and that's about a 2% growth rate. Charlottesville City is not growing. It's pretty stable at about 40,000.
Okay, and then so growth is increasing, at least for Albemarle County, for the majority of places out there.
Yes.
Yet there's a line on your website in bold area that says growth is not inevitable.
Ah.
And I'm curious as to how those balance themselves out without following one of the rules or taking on one of the ideas that many places take on, which is build me a wall and don't come through it. Right. I don't. I'm sorry that there are more people who want to live here, that there are more people who are born here from people who already live here. But you can't stay one in, one out.
Well, I mean, we hear that a lot. And what we're trying to do is develop a planning tool so that we can plan for the growth in population, but try to level it off at some point. You know, whatever number or range or whatever policies are implemented are not immutable. I mean, obviously, there are things that could happen. One of our board members raised the issue of, what if the seas rise and everybody in the Hampton Roads area has to move inland?
I mean, yeah, my family lives there, Jeff.
Right, and we don't want to separate families. We're a big believer in families, and obviously there has to be some flexibility, but it's important to plan so that you're not caught unawares and unprepared for what comes next.
Rick, let me add to that. We, in ASAP, believe, and I think this is common sense, that growth will stop, and it'll stop for one of three reasons. One, it'll stop because a community runs out of an essential resource. And more, it seems, in many places, water is that area.
Right. There are plenty of places throughout the United States that have decreasing population.
Exactly.
Even in Virginia, I believe that Danville has decreasing population
right.
because loss of job opportunity.
Right. Okay. So for one of the reasons growth will stop in every community is that essential resources are depleted. A second reason is because the place becomes so unattractive that folks don't want to go there, and the folks who are living there pull out. And inner cities are a classic example of that, and some suburbs. A third reason that communities will stop growing is that, at least in smart communities, the residents look at these other two alternatives and say, hey, wait a minute, we don't want to reach those points. Let's plan now to start slowing and ultimately stopping before we run out of essential resources, or before the place becomes so unattractive, so ugly, that we don't want to live here anymore. And that's what ASAP is arguing for. Let's avoid those other two ways of stopping and use the sane way.
I mean, the desirability of a place to live is often based on the community character, let's say. And so, you know, the Charlottesville-Albemarle area has been a urban center with the university and the surrounding county and basically a rural county. And does a small town with rural area have a right to say we want to be a small town with rural area, or is it destined to become Fairfax County? I mean, I guess it wasn't that long ago that Fairfax County probably had more dairy cows than any other county in the state. So do we have some ability and a right to say here's what we want to be, and by doing so create these planning tools to keep us in some sense a small town center with a rural urban ring?
Let me acknowledge that some of this does sound novel to, I'm sure, a lot of your readers. We think that while the ASAP approach is cutting edge, it's also common sense that no community can grow forever, and we have to have some sort of limit to growth. It just seems evident to us. And in fact, when you look at any community that already has zoning, there's already a cap on growth. When you think about Albemarle County now, every single parcel has a limit on the number of subdivisions within it. That determines how many residential units, how many commercial and industrial units, how many, and if you tally all the parcels up, you get a total build-out, theoretical build-out, of residential units. You multiply that by the average number of people in each, and it's about 2.3, 2.5, you get an existing theoretical build-out population based on zoning. And what ASAP is saying is that the number we want? Or do we want more or fewer people as our optimal size? And it's also apparent to us that that theoretical build-out is a function not of thoughtful planning, where our leaders 30, 50 years ago stepped back, mulled over the big picture and said, okay, what do we want to be? But it's a function of 1,000 individual decisions about sections of the community and parcels of land. Let's zone this such and such. Let's zone that such and such. And nobody ever saw the implications, the cumulative impact of all that. We argue that that's an essential planning tool, that our community should know what the ultimate build-out is and should ask itself if that's what it wants. Curiously, in Albemarle County, we don't know what build-out is now.
All right, we got a call. Caller, hang tight for just a second because there's a weird way things are working today. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
All right, go ahead and ask your question.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. This whole thing sounds a little bit like a slippery slope to me. I think that one thing about maybe some of the counties that were mentioned, especially I think the Albemarle County, but there's also other counties that I can think of in Virginia that are becoming very popular, people are moving to because maybe other areas, let's just say around some of the northern states or cities are becoming too full or non-sustainable, so they're moving into more rural areas that are very desirable. And to me, it sounds a little bit slippery in the sense that once some of these folks come down, then they start setting up regulations that says, well, we're going to set this number as a sustainable number, and we're going to keep everybody else out. And that sounds, I don't know exactly how it sounds, but it sounds pretty scary to me. And you kind of mentioned it earlier about the, you know, building a wall or keeping people out. So I do agree that we do have to be aware of the resources and that they're not going to just be around forever. And we have to have awareness, but I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I'm not particularly caring about what I hear. Any comment on that?
All right. I'm going to have to, the way the phone thing is set up today, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to have to hang up and let you listen online, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Let me comment about that. I think one of the things that's going on with the United States right now, say, as opposed to Europe, for a long time, sort of the way we look at things, I think, has been shaped by the fact that we were recently colonized by European or established country. And for a long time, we've had a frontier, and Americans are used to the idea of being able to expand, go west, that there are untamed lands that we can settle, build farms, build cities, and so on in. And we've often, because of that, not really had to face in as inescapable a way the fact that there are limits to our population. And there are these limits. I mean, and you know, if you read biology, if you think about farming, farmers can carry only so many cows per acre and so on that are pretty inescapable. When we start trying to say, hey, you know, as a nation, we've really grown a lot in terms of people, and we're starting to be where we're about filled up, maybe, or we're getting into that area, and we need to think about this. Some people react to the idea that we can't simply grow, or perhaps grow anywhere we might think it would be desirable to do. Some people react by saying, well, then it means that these draconian things will happen if we acknowledge that these limits occur. Namely, well, then we have to build walls and say, you can't come in unless you get one person to go out. And the whole sort of approach with ASAP is that if we can get ahead of the game, if we can start thinking about these things before we hit the wall, before it's a crisis, we can start heading things off, and we can start thinking about how do we cope with these genuine issues. Really, they're basic facts of the universe. But how do we deal with them in a way that sort of preserves the things about our country, the way we govern ourselves as a culture, that preserves sort of kind of things we value in America as a form of government? And for example, I mean, in Albemarle County or in Virginia, I mean, generally in the U.S., local governments have a great deal of control of land use. And if you watch the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, in a year, there will be requests for development proposals, upzonings, and so on, to build large shopping centers or to expand residential development, in a previously undeveloped area. One can, in fact, affect the number of people that live in an area, certainly without building a wall and saying no more people can come in, simply if, for example, you say we have to keep so much open space because we need its ecological services, and we're not going to upzone because that would destroy these aspects of an ecosystem we believe we need for public welfare. That, in fact, is saying we're not going to expand the number of residences at this point because we believe we need to keep open space. And then there are other ways like this. I mean, it doesn't come down to these very harsh decisions, which are kind of worst-case results, I would say most likely to arise if we don't try to face the issue soon.
Look, all right, guys, I want to keep going on this topic, but I need to take my first break. I'm already a little late over it. Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population, ASAP, Jack Marshall, Jeff Sobel, that was Tom Olivier. Feel free to dial us up, 979-0919. We will be taking questions. I think the last caller really touched on a great point that we will get back to after I give you the markets of Tiger Fuel weather forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. There's a wind advisory through the day and in some places still tomorrow. Cloudy with rain, highs 40 to 45, some possible flurries in the valley. Mostly cloudy and windy tonight, lows 20 to 25, clear in the Richmond area. And then a chance of snow in the valley tomorrow, although sunny in other areas, highs 30 to 35. Right now, clouds in most places, 39 in the valley, 39 in Lynchburg, 38 and rain in Richmond, 39 and a light rain in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And we want to thank Crossroads Music and Movies, three area locations. They're in Stanton, Lexington, and Waynesboro. Holiday season is here. Crossroads has a large selection of music and movies for rent or sale. The Crossroads staff will take the time to help you find what you want. That's Crossroads Music and Movies, Stanton, Lexington, Waynesboro. And Blue Ridge Mountain Sports helping support us today. Blue Ridge has footwear for the season for walking or trail running, as well as stocking stuffers for the outdoor people on your list. That includes hiking guides, LED flashlights, and multi-tools. You can also pick up your first night button or tickets to the upcoming Banff Mountain Film Festival at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Berwick Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville and at brms.com. All right, back in action with the gentleman from ASAP, 979-0919, dial us up. We were talking about the last caller who was uncomfortable with some of the things that ASAP was saying here today.
One of the things, Rick, that she seemed concerned about, and I think legitimately, is, so what impact would ASAP's Albemarle County policy, if we could implement it, have on surrounding counties? And it's a good question. Let me start by saying that already, right now, the cost of housing and taxes in Albemarle County is driving folks who've lived here for generations out. And a lot of them are moving to contiguous counties. They tend to be the younger folks who have kids. And then the other counties around us have to build schools. We get the older, richer folks, and the surrounding counties have the younger, poorer folks with lots of kids for whom they have to build. It's a lousy system.
The true working class folks.
Yeah. And if I were Louisa Flavanna Green and so forth, I too would be, I'd be distraught at what right now is happening to their counties as a result of growth in Albemarle County. Now, so how will our strategy affect that? Well, we're not quite sure what effect it would have on pushing people out. We think that on the contrary, that it would not push people out. We'd have fewer people here. But the big question is, so what about these other counties on whom we're inflicting folks? And what's the answer is, let's help them adopt their own comprehensive population policy. They're not stupid. They should have the same rights, the same actually responsibilities for long-term planning that Albemarle County has. Right now, in Albemarle County, what we think is happening is it's the triumph of the short-term good of a few over the long-term good for the whole community. And what we're trying to do is increase the probability that our decision makers, our leaders, will come up with policies that help the whole community over the long haul. And we want, ASAP would be delighted to be working simultaneously with surrounding counties who are clever enough to recognize that the same issues, the same population, the same demographic issues are facing them.
That's Jack Marshall from Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population. I got Tom Olivier and Jeff Sobel here as well. Dial up 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I really should take the pressure off Michael. It's not that the phones are set up improperly. It's that we have a shortage of headphones so that all the guests can't hear you if I push certain buttons. So I have to push other buttons so that they can hear you properly. So phone calls should not be turned away, please. I think it's an important topic, and we'd love to get your opinions on it. But, you know, Tom, I come back to what you said after the caller made her comments. It is sort of discouraging. Well, never mind. I'll hold off on my thoughts. The callers are always more important. Who was first, Michael?
Mark.
All right. We got Mark. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. I'm going to count down from five, and then you can start telling us your story. Mark from Albemarle. Five, four, three, two, one.
Hi, yes. I guess I have two questions for the gentleman here. The first is, I guess I don't know if I necessarily agree with some of the points that have been made on, I'm concerned about the low-income housing as well, in that if we utilize a capitalistic system, eventually the cost of land will become so expensive and it'll be difficult to keep people here that are, you know, third, fourth, fifth, sixth generation, just by the fact that the prices of land will be going up. That's just a point, I think, and I'd be curious to know about that. I guess I'm also curious as to what the group's policy on maybe new technologies is, in that things like, you know, rainwater collecting, you know, maybe each home can become a micro generation of electricity utilizing solar. You know, if we switch to a more smaller scale economy in agriculture, could the carrying capacity of the land be higher, and therefore we could actually increase the amount of population that Albemarle holds?
All right, good stuff, Mark. I'm going to hang up and let the guys talk.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, that's exactly right. I'll start with a technology question, but yeah, if technology improves, then obviously it changes the equation. But population is part of the equation, and technology might improve, you know, carrying capacity and environmental impacts. As to the first part of the question about the cost of land is going up. Taxes are going up. It's really difficult to provide low-income housing, workforce housing, and affordable housing for a lot of our citizens. We think that having a plan and with an optimum sustainable population can help provide opportunities to either create land trusts or some community land ownership policy so that the cost of housing can be kept down so that people who have lived here and want to live here in different levels of income can. And I think that with planning you can perhaps provide encouragement for different types of housing developments.
Hang on. We're going to keep going with this for another minute or two.
The caller's concern about the capitalist system. Let me point out that the free market economy right now is not doing a very good job of solving our issues of providing low and affordable housing. It's doing a lousy job. And one of our basic premises in ASAP is that any thinking, any planning about population must be done hand in glove with planning for the provision of affordable housing. That's a major tenet of our organization. And let me go to the technology, the new technology issue. We encourage everything that a community can do to improve its consumption. But let me point out that in the late 60s, and ever since then, it's been obvious, Paul Ehrlich pointed this out first, that environmental impact is a function not just of per capita, well, not just of consumption, but of population. And in fact, it's per capita consumption. And the environmental movement, all of us are tree huggers in this organization, and the environmental movement is doing a wonderful job of raising consciousness, but its focus is on consumption and not the per capita part. ASAP in no way denies the importance of lowering our impact, our biological, our carrying capacity, our footprint, but simultaneously we've got to be looking at the capitas. It's per capita consumption, not just consumption. And unless we deal with growing populations, let me just point out that we could cut our consumption in half, which is highly improbable, but if we double our population, we're right back to where we started.
All right. We do have another caller. Caller, did you hang with me?
I hung with you.
All right. And you are on.
Yeah, I'm the same person that called earlier, the first caller. It's good. A lot of things are coming up here that I was thinking about. The whole issue about, you know, maybe, I think you said conservation easements, if I'm saying that correctly, or just something to keep land from being developed, you know, so that we have resources. That was one thought I had. And, of course, this other gentleman brought up the thought about everything going up so high that maybe generations that were from that area can't move back. That's sort of my concern in a nice county here. And possibly looking at that whole big picture and the whole thing about, recycling, reclaiming, reusing, and just being responsible citizens. I think, Ben, since you all have covered a lot of this, one thing I want to know is if you're trying to set awareness and policy, perhaps, are you trying to work with state government to do any type of, work on setting any kind of policy here?
All right, hang on a sec, all right, because I just got to work this all out and push their buttons on and turn your button off. Go, guys.
You're pushing our button?
Yeah, well, I'm good at that, according to my girlfriend.
I think the answer is at this point, you know, when you try to develop a new idea and you want to bring it into local government, you have to choose a kind of a manageable initial framework to work in. And we went back and forth a lot about how big an area can we try to deal with. And we concluded, given our organization and the need to kind of sell to educate people about just what we're really trying to do and why we believe it will work, we've started out with two local governments, Alamo County, City of Charlottesville. We, in fact, at our board level, talk about having to go statewide and so on, but it's really kind of an institutional limit that we have. We're a pretty small non-government organization. So
how many people are in the organization?
Our membership now is about 300, our paid membership, and we've got about 500 on our mailing list.
So we're very aware of the statewide need, but we feel like, for example, to start lobbying Richmond and so on. We were just discussing the other day, you know, you're talking about having a lobbyist in Richmond, and we're just not in a position to do that immediately. But it's something down the road we want to do.
And in response to your first and last caller, we're not trying to pass draconian laws with government. We really want community involvement. I mean, we think it's important for the community to have input, at all levels about what it is they want their community to be. And but to help inform that discussion, we've started this research project, which we think is important to get some facts on the table and investigate various aspects of the growth and the effects of growth.
I guess I still keep coming back to the same point, though, of, and believe me, I think that Charlottesville is, and Albemarle are blowing past, you know, they are the family member who's put on 100 pounds from the last time you saw them at the holiday season. But it's just, I'm still lost at the idea of how you properly set the number. Even if it's a range, you know, okay, so it's not 140,212, but you decide that it's somewhere between 130 and 150, and you don't end up telling people that they can't move in.
Rick, good point. First, let me step back again, look at the big the three big questions, I think, in this discussion, and they're raised both by you and your callers. First, the first issue is to recognize the very concept of an optimal sustainable size, rather than leaving our growth up either to accident or to the folks who profit from growth. What we're saying is a community, a smart community, should identify that size. Okay, that's the first concept. The second one is the mechanisms for doing the... How do you go about defining that size? That's your immediate question. And then this last caller brought up, so what? What are the policy implications? How do you take advantage once you know, or you think you know, what that size is? How does it affect land use or building a wall or a moat or whatever your mechanisms are? Let me say, incidentally, that we're not thinking about a wall or a moat.
A moat would kind of be cool.
let's go, if you'll let us, into a little bit about the research to answer your question. So how does a smart community identify its optimal sustainable size? Let me point out first that we think that optimal and sustainable probably aren't the same concepts. It may well be that a biologically sustainable population, that is, when you look at the biological carrying capacity, may be greater than a lot of the folks who live there want, which would be optimal. It may well be that the people who've been here 30 years that say, oh, man, we had our best size back right. when I was a youngster.
We missed that a long time ago.
So our research, is, in fact, I'll look at 7 or 8 different simultaneous but independent smaller studies. And let me just quickly go through those. One is the most obvious. We go to residents. We say, what do you think? Now, a new study would cost more than we have. So what we want to do is ask specialists, in this case it would be UVA's Center for Survey Research, to go back and look at the last 20 years of surveys that they've done and glean questions and answers of local residents about what they think about growth and optimal size. That's one study. A second one is, as I think Jeff mentioned, the character of a community changes as its size does. Somebody said that the heart and soul of a community is affected as the population grows. A village ain't the same as a small town, which isn't the same as a big town and a city. One of our retired professor emeritus at the university, has done good bit of work on the character of a community as a function of size, and he's going to be looking at the literature on that. A third research thread or approach builds on, do you remember in 2004 when we were named the best place in America to live?
Of course, who doesn't? I have a t-shirt that says I live here.
We cursed that guy. We put pins in a doll of him. But he's a very, very bright cookie. He has a wonderful database, and now he's going to be working with us on this research to help us identify the optimal size, or to get our arms around it. Let me just pause here when I say our arms around it. This is a little bit like blind men trying to define the elephant. Each of these threads, these research approaches that I'm mentioning, is like one of us grabbing the elephant by a leg or a trunk or a tail, and no one is going to give us the answer. But we hope that all together they'll help us get a better fix on the elephant, or in this case, our optimal sustainable size. Back to the best place to live. So Bert Sperling, who did this study, published in the book Cities Ranked and Rated, is going to be using his database to say, well, what would Charlotte's? How would the Charlottesville Metropolitan Statistical Area rank with a larger population? Trying to hold other things constant. It's still a university town. It's still in the foothills, the lovely foothills of the Piedmont. What would its rank have been had it been another 50,000, another 100,000, another 200,000? A fourth research thread looks at the fiscal costs of growth. Growth beyond the current 130,000 broadens the tax base, but it also requires us to build new schools and roads and water and wastewater treatment and provide more police and fire protection and so forth. What happens as the population grows? Will the tax revenue offset the costs of growth so that we can grow in a fiscally neutral way? Well, we don't know, and one team is going to be looking at that. And then we get more into the environmental carrying capacity issue. And Tom Olivier has alluded to the study that we're going to be doing on ecosystem services. It's clear, and it's become more and more clear in the last 10 years, that our environment isn't just nifty to look out on, but it provides invaluable and very fiscally valuable services. Everything from pollination to filtering out nasty things. And as population grows and encroaches on the environment, it starts to threaten those services. And we want to see, is there a point, or are there points, at which population growth and density start to eat away at what we take for granted on ecological services?
Let me jump in here, Jack. This is Jack Marshall, president of ASAP Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population. He's flanked by Tom Olivier and Jeff Sobel from ASAP today. 11:46 on the wake-up call. I got lots of questions left. I hope there's a caller or two out there who wants to ask a question. 979-0919, 1-877 WNR and Rocks, but let me do this.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, this week in The Hook, the opening of After Hours Video in October led to 8 felony obscenity charges for the owner and the passage of 2 anti-pornography ordinances by Stanton City Council. Now the lawyer who represented Larry Flint of Hustler Magazine is involved. Where will all this go? The story of the wheelchair-bound citizen being hit by a county police car continues. Who called for the injured man to be given a ticket? Area citizens want to know. And some tips on how to keep your garden healthy, even in the cold. The Hook, reminding you that Santa will be in the studio making phone calls from WNRN next Sunday. And let's take a moment to thank Blue Ridge Graphics. You can find them at Mead Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. And at brgtshirts.com. And don't be going anywhere, because the big man, Drew Thompson, standing next to me, he's here for Les Temps Perdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Lover Boy. You know, I used to dance a lot to that and wear the little bandana. No Heart, no REO Speedwagon. But he will play Blondie and Moby and Love and Rockets. And he likes requests. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right, back with our guys. From ASAP. Jack, let me jump to something. It was one of the things that you brought up, and I'm going to ask Jeff, because Jeff informed me that he was the guy full of opinions without facts, and well, if he wants to jump on and let somebody else actually throw in some facts. But doesn't, I want to know about local businesses. Isn't economic growth dependent on population growth? And how do small, locally owned businesses play into our discussion today about growth and ASAP?
Well, I have a couple answers to that question based on opinions. One is, you know, as the population grows, the big chain stores, box stores, say, oh, we can move in there now. There's enough people. And so then I think it's been shown around the country that a lot of times those big box stores put a lot more pressure on little family-owned businesses. Another example I use is real estate. The real estate market booms, and one group of people that increases in numbers are realtors. And so, you know, a realtor who's here making a good living, now maybe the volume of sales is greater, but it's being split many more ways.
So are you saying that population growth doesn't help local business economic growth, but population growth traditionally helps national big box company economic growth? Is that what you're...
I'm saying it doesn't necessarily help business growth.
I want to make a couple of comments here. I mean, I think many small businesses do see growth as a benefit. I mean, it means, you know, they're already in a particular place, they're positioned to deal with customers. And the idea of bringing in more people with money to spend, it sort of seems like a growth provides a steady supply of customers.
But my point was it also brings in more competition.
Right. And it can do that. And you're right. You may attract developers from other areas and so on. But I think, you know, businessmen, everyone who lives here, of course, there are many sort of fiscal costs to growth that are pretty substantial. And everyone ends up paying taxes to support the added schooling that's necessary for new people. So it depends on how tightly you focus on the economic consequences of growth and not growth. I mean, from a point of view of supplying customers, it seems beneficial, but when you start thinking about, well, as a business person, I'll also have to pay the taxes to educate their kids, that's a kind of different level. But there's another one, too. And this is, you know, economists, I mean, as a biologist for years and sort of reading economics occasionally, you often see economists just saying, well, the healthy economy is a growing economy. And this just seems to be built into the heads of many people. But in fact, what's been going on in recent decades, though, is you're seeing a development of a branch of economics, and a fellow, Herman Daly, is particularly influential and important. He said, well, you know, the economies have to exist within the natural world. It's not that we can simply expand the human economy indefinitely. There will always be something we can substitute for something that's in short supply and too expensive. There are physical limits to growth imposed by the world we live in. And so you're starting to see high-level economic efforts to kind of understand we do have limits to growth in economic systems, and we have to have economic systems that function well and fairly and in which people can prosper and live good lives. So this is sort of a different flip side of the sort of issue we're talking about. People in economics are understanding we have to think ahead on this. And, perhaps, you know, money is a pretty recent invention compared to human existence, just a few thousand years.
Caller, hang on a sec. I'm going to let Jack make a last comment on this.
Just a quick point. The argument that the economic sky will fall if we adopt a stationary population is not borne out by Europe, where the populations are not growing and the economies are vibrant. And there is, as Tom points out, there is a link. We've got to start thinking about whether we can, what kind of an economy we can maintain over the long haul. Again, we're not just thinking of the short term. Americans are lousy at thinking beyond next Thursday. We're not good at deferring gratification. And yet, our world and our community has reached a point where we've got to start thinking over the long haul and being able to defer gratification if we care about the world and the community our kids and our kids' kids live in.
All right, let's see. I got Bud from Whitehall. Hey, Bud.
Hey, you pushed the right button.
All right. All right, start talking.
I hope everybody can hear me. I found it interesting, Jack's comment when he said we don't know what the optimum build-out is. You know, if we know how many division rights everybody has, supposedly, you should have a pretty good idea. Now, as to what's acceptable, obviously that's up in the air. You know, if we do limit the growth in this area, like we're proposing or y'all are proposing, you know, the values are going to go up. I mean, if you can only have so many people in here, it's going to be a very desirable place to be. No one else can come in. You know, the value's got to go up. That's going to push me out, you know. I'm on the fringe now, and I think the affordable housing thing is great in theory, but I don't think it will help my situation any as far as, you know, being able to stay. You know, the tree hugger aspect, I think it's wonderful. I think you all as a group, ASAP as a group, don't give the folks that have lived here for generations enough credit as to their feelings and their practices as far as protecting the environment. And it seems to me that y'all want to mandate even more ordinances, whatnot, affecting us when we're already doing it. It's interesting to me that a lot of the folks that are jumping up and down and doing a lot of screaming, which gets a lot of attention, are the ones that live in Old Trail, which still has an extreme impact on our environment. And it bothers me that some of the ordinances that are on the books are laying in the wings. affect me and my family. And I think if ASAP is truly friendly family, y'all would contact me and say, hey, you know, what's your situation? Well, this is what we're doing to help you out, not to limit the use of my land, so I could build an affordable house for my two sons to live in. Some of the proposals will restrict me from doing that. And I'm just extremely, extremely uneasy. Like the woman said earlier, the slippery slope. I'm uneasy with the government having that kind of control over my family. And I think if it's spread countywide in these growth areas and whatnot, which it's not. It doesn't appear to me that it is. It's being directed at me. I'm the one that has the trees that y'all want to hug. They're my trees, and you're welcome to come up and hug them, but don't tell me what to do with my land. It really burns me. And that's really all I wanted to say. And, you know, I agree with you guys what you're trying to do, but you can't put up a wall. You can't, you know, unless people stop having babies, unless people stop trying to get away from the cities where there's terrorist threats. You know, I mean, that's what started the great encroachment in the last 10 years. You know, everybody's trying to get away from those places. And this is a supposedly safer place to be. You know, I don't know how you're going to stop that.
You made your point. I want to give these guys time to respond. I think you got some great stuff going on there. And obviously, I need to do a second show with these guys because I got 20 questions here that I haven't even gotten to about Crozet and Old Trail and Biscuit Run and transportation and et cetera. But keep listening. Go back, listen to the podcast that's going to come up, and go to the website. What's the website, guys?
ASAP.
Hold on. There you go.
www.asapnow.org.
All right. Bud, thanks for calling. But we're at the very last couple minutes of the show, and I have to do this before I give you guys a chance to respond. You are listening to WNRN 91.9 and WNRS FM, Sweetbriar, Amherst, Lynchburg. We want to thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for letting us be on the air. The Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10 on Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Berkshire Shopping Center. You can find them in the Hollymead Town Center and on the downtown mall. On the web, it's fiveguys.com, fiveguys.com. All right, Bud gave us a lot to talk about, but we only got 2 minutes left. Obviously, I need to have you ASAP guys back on, so jump in it.
We certainly sympathize with Bud's position. We think that family-owned property that is being well taken care of should have some loopholes in terms of any new ordinances. We all have property also. I mean, I know my property would be affected by stream setbacks and critical slope changes in ordinances, but at some point, you know, the greater good of the community may be involved. And so there are some things that I think we have to decide we're either willing to accept or not. I mean, I think it's reasonable to disagree. And certainly in terms of, if I moved here today, I couldn't afford to live here. And
how long have each of you guys lived in this county? Jeff?
35 years.
Jack?
20 years.
Tom.
26 years.
Okay, so we're not talking about guys who moved down from Northern Virginia. Like, we have several. Don't we have a Board of Supervisors member who's really only lived here 4 or 5 years, six years?
Let me respond to one of the things Bud said.
You got a minute.
I bet that Bud doesn't object to driving on the right side of the road. He's willing to sacrifice some freedoms for the overall safety of his family and his community and himself. I think that we've got to start recognizing more that if we want big freedoms over the long haul, we may have to give up some small freedoms in the short term, like driving on the right. And I think Bud and a lot of other folks are going to come to that recognition, either voluntarily or involuntarily.
All right. It's amazing what we can jump into, and we didn't get to most of my questions about biggest area problems and what our local administration, local government is doing right and wrong. And we barely touched sustainable housing. And we didn't talk about your $50,000 grant, which is really what got Jeff and I emailing back and forth to talk about this. So go to the website. You can Google put Virginia or Albemarle in there with ASAP, and it'll lead you to the site. I believe it was top of the list. I've got to invite you guys back on maybe in the spring to come back on and talk about this some more. I'm amazed at the how little we got question-wise done on a Sunday before Christmas. Happy holidays to you, to the three of you. Good luck with the organization, and I hope you get enough feedback from both sides to turn it in the way that best suits the community.
Thanks for having us, Rick.
Thank you. Right. Appreciate you having us.
Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, next week Santa will be in the studio making phone calls out to the kids. If you'd like your kid to receive a call from Santa, you can email us at abstractme@aol.com. We'll have elves and everybody here next week, and we usually have a reading of a very famous Christmas book as well, but so that I don't get sued by the makers, I won't mention it anymore. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.